Boker Tov, good morning, and today we have a special guest in our program. He's the chairperson of Israel Parliamentary Friendship, and we heard about him before last week. Today we're actually going to talk with him about his work with Israel and in the parliament. So his name is Alfred Matua Kore Naro. Did I say it correctly in the right order, or is it Alfred Naro Matua Kore?
No, it's Alfred Emetua, M-E-T-U-A, Metua Kore Naro.
Alfred Emetua
Kore
Naro. Naro. Okay, now I got it. So tell us a bit about, well, first of all, hello to you, kia ora, and shalom to everyone. And we'd like to know today about your work in the parliament, regarding Israel, and you work with different kind of organization like New Zealand Friends of Israel and others. What can you tell us about your job?
So first thing I want to say, Sigal, and also to good morning to all our listeners, is that being the chairperson of the Israeli Parliamentary Friendship Group is both a connection through my Jewish ancestry, but also to a passion that I have in wanting to ensure that there is strong advocacy and support for all of those things that are Israel that are important. So that's the reason why I wanted to become the chairperson for that parliamentary group. The
role, but it's part of you. It's part of your identity, right, in a way.
Yep.
Part of your roots, your ancestors.
Yeah, and so therefore, if you're going to honour that, then you've got to do something to honour that. And that's part of what I wanted to do, is to honour that memory of my grandmother, the culture and the heritage that sits inside of me. And so the best thing I can do is to be active in the role that I have currently as the chairperson.
I've got to tell you something. You told me in last program that your grandmother, I mean, she was Jewish, and she was born in Otutake. Is that right?
Yep, and that's true, yeah.
Do you know, about 3 years ago, I was in Otutake. And it was really interesting because I met there someone who is a historian. I can't remember his name. And he took us to a site, a very old ancient site in Otutake, where he built a Maori village. But next to it were a lot of ruins from an old area where they actually circumcised the boys.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the Cook Islanders in Otutake,
yeah,
used to circumcise the children. And as you know, circumcision is part of, you know, the main pillar of Judaism.
Mm.
So, so he said there are so many interesting things that actually relate to people who came to Otutake, to the tribes of Israel, the lost tribes of Israel.
That's right.
So it was really interesting to see it and to hear about it. He was actually researching the whole thing, and it was great to see. Did you ever see that one?
Yes, and I know the site that you're talking about, because it's not far from where my grandmother grew up, and around that village, around the places of Tautu and Arotanga. Where she grew up as well. So I know the site you're talking about, and you are right, because even you would have seen in the carvings, for instance, so a lot of times the carvings that they have would be able to sort of show the fact that circumcision actually is a very strong part of the culture. And that's one of the similarities we have with the Jewish culture.
Do they still practice it today? Until today, or it's more a Christian thing?
No, a lot of them still do.
Yeah.
As far as I know, yeah, that's still practiced, you know, quite commonly as well. So yeah.
It was really interesting because I saw on one little island so many churches, and, you know, I think the main function of the day was actually on Sunday, that everyone, you know, just get dressed and walk to the church, and it was so beautiful to see it. But when they heard I'm from Israel, they were just like thrilled, wow, Israel, you know.
Yeah. Well, they would be, because when you think about in the church, you learn so much about the Old Testament, about the Bible. You learn about, you know, the main characters of the Bible. You learn about God. And to have someone that actually comes from the holy, what we would say is the Holy Land, you'd be like an angel to them. You know, in the sense that,
yes,
wow,
I'm an angel.
You're just coming along and then tell us about that place. And everyone that we know that's been to Israel from the Pacific, it's a spiritual experience. It's not just being there as a tourist to see a wonderful destination. you know, people that I've known that have gone up to Masada, for instance, or gone through to Jerusalem itself and, you know, gone to the wall. And just every time they explain it, they said it's spiritual. And I think for the connections that we have between, you know, Polynesia and Pacifica, and with the, you know, the Jewish community, is that, you know, spirituality becomes an important part of who we are. You know, it helps us to put things in perspective. It helps us to understand when we travel in this life, sometimes the reasons why things happen, but then also to how we can, you know, have those values that help us to work through those challenges that we face as well. So, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
You know, a few years ago, I was researching about the Maori people and their affiliation to the Lost Java of Israel. And while I was writing my book called Journeys to the Promised Land, I interviewed different kind of Tohunga who were talking about these stories. And when I asked them, do your people know about it? Do they know about this korero? Do they know about these stories? And they said, nope. We didn't transfer it to the next generation, which I think it's a bit of a shame, a little bit, because, we do need to find the connection. Mm-hmm. And but what I really liked the most is by the end of the day, they told me, you know, we all related to the oneness. We all came from the same source. It doesn't matter what religion we are. We all came from the one. And I actually really, I could connect to this story as well. From that point of view.
And I agree, because it's been such an oral, you know, tradition for such a long time, and now a lot of those, the way we transfer information isn't always through oral traditions. You know, there are books that are written, there are things that people read, and yet that's the reasons why when people sometimes look at the Polynesian culture, gosh, these guys sit down and they talk and talk and talk and talk. Well, if you think about the fact is that if you've got a book and you just read it and read it and read it, well, the same time you read is the same time we talk. And so reading means you become informed. Talking, we become informed. So it's like the opportunities this morning to be able to for you and I to talk. As we are talking, we become enriched by the things that we learn. And that's the reasons why Polynesian culture, and I'm sure that even in the Jewish culture, there are important times to keep talking to each other.
And argue to each other, because we know when there is one question, there are so many answers.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks something else, and this is a really common thing that I could see for any idea. There are so many opinions within the Maori community, the Pacific Islander community, and especially in the Israeli community. You know, we have so many opinions, left, right. It just...
Yeah. You guys have more opinions than anyone else.
I think so.
But, you know, Sigal, that's why, you know, in my role as the chair becomes important, because it's these sorts of conversations. It's informing people. It's engaging people so that people understand actually what is the culture really all about. Who are these people that often, when we see them in the news, we see, you know, Israel. We see the conflict that happens between Israel and Palestine. And all we know is from what the media is portraying to us. And part of what I'm passionate about in my role as the chairperson is to make sure that we've got lots of opportunity to be able to talk, to be able to tell both sides of the story, to invite people in, to meet the community. And I think that's one of the things, is that how can we meet more of the community? And I'm really thankful, because, you know, to know that, and would make my grandmother proud, that here I am, you know, speaking with you, talking about the things that are important, you know, to her and to her history and to her grandfather, her father, and to the community, she'd be proud. I know that, you know, I've been able to do that and to talk about those things. So that's what the role of the parliamentary group is actually to make sure that we're better informed, that those who are decision makers in the country and can be influential, and so therefore that we want to continue to grow, because we've got a very strong and a long history of relationship with Israel. And, you know, this year we just celebrated 100 years of Beersheba. We're talking about the whole aspect of that relationship where, you know, Kiwi soldiers were there and were part of the contingent to ensure that in that time of conflict and confrontation, you know, we had this relationship, we had this partnership as well.
Oh, of course, in the Second World War and the First World War, on Beersheba and Jerusalem.
Yeah.
I know one of my family actually died. He was a New Zealander, and he died in the battle on Beersheba. I actually was there at that time when they did the ceremony. So it was quite interesting, the story that I heard about the Bedouins at that days and the New Zealanders and the relationship and what really happened there. So but that will be a story for another time. So you talked about your part of making a connection with Israel and getting people to know more about it and get the right information. But you know, I mean, as an Israeli and Jewish, I feel that the media here is basically not really fair, doesn't really present both sides. So do you think that New Zealand media has failed to give a fair presentation of Israel?
So when Dr. Enard Wolf was here, one of the comments that we made to her was that at the moment Israel is losing the war on perception in regards to having a balanced view. And so I believe that right across that there needs to be more of a balanced view. The only way that we can do that is to make sure that we get as much information. We connect people, and that's everyone, both the leaders in Parliament, both the business community, the media, all of those that can be better informed so that we don't allow for anti-Semitic sort of behaviour, comments, that people actually understand actually the role that important that role that Israel plays, and I think you know that's really important. So I believe that there needs to be a bit more of a balanced view, and I think part of the role that I can play and others can play is to be putting more information and making them better informed.
You know, so many of us write letters to the media, to the radio, to the TV. We just ask them to have a balanced view. We just want to show our side of the story. Mm-hmm. And we always get a negative response. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, recently, we had Gideon Levy, if you heard about him. He's a radical left-wing journalist that was hosted by a Māori representative and Auckland Uni about 2 weeks ago, something like that. So through his broadcast and interview, all I heard was an incitement of hate and anti-Semitism.
Wow.
More than that, he was given a platform on the radio and TV to encourage terrorism in Israel. For example, he stated that stabbing and knifing by using scissors against Israelis is understandable, and it's the only way for Palestinians to get attention from the Israeli government and the world media. One of the Māori representatives stood up there and said that they can identify with the Palestinians as they see themselves under occupation as well. As you can see, in New Zealand, the media about Israel is really, we are really portrayed as an oppressors. Mm-hmm. And I find radical groups like Islamic radical groups are actually confusing the Pacific Islanders and get them to the wrong side.
Yeah.
Incite hate and not love and no connection. Yeah. When we Israelis, you know, we're in a democratic country, everyone can express their opinion and that's fine, but we never ever encourage hate, we encourage peace.
Mm.
And that was I was taught when I was at school.
I totally agree with you. And look, I totally disagree with those sorts of comments. I'm also too appalled that a radio station like that, and even a Māori radio station, can be able to allow to provide a platform for that sort of comment to be made. I think it's totally wrong, and I would absolutely speak out against that as well. I think that what needs to happen then is that, you're right, we need to be more proactive. And you asked the question the other week about what are the things that I'm keen to do, you know, throughout 2018. And one of them is to be more proactive. One of them is to be a strong advocate so that whenever there are anti-Semitic sort of types of comments that are made, and even also challenge, as you say, the media to portray a more balanced view. And I think that we need to do better at that. And part of it is that we need to find a certain strategy or a different strategy being able to do that. I know that different groups have set up their own media networks, or somehow in the social media, somehow we need to find a ways of getting our stories across. Other ways that I think are important is that I notice that there are a lot of trips now that are going, people are going, Kiwis that are going over to Israel. There are tourist trips that are going. So many people, when they've gone over there and they've come back, they've talked about how wonderful it is. So I wonder if there's a way of being able to mobilize that group of people. So as they gain a greater appreciation for Israel, how can we then be able to mobilize them and see if they'd be willing to be part of some sort of friendship group or connection and network to be able to allow them to speak up as well. So many voices, I think, can become a stronger mobilization to be able to motivate them to say, look, you know, whenever we see this, we need to be vigilant. But I think I always believe that the best defense is offense. So, but what are we going to do to portray the other side of Israel so that we can tell the stories of how that Israel hospitals are healing Palestinian children? The stories that I've heard, where that actually Israel is the number one democracy in the whole of the Middle East, where, as you've said, Tigal, that people are free to be able to run their businesses, have their different points of view. Do people actually really understand the democracy that exists, that in a nation of Israel, there are Muslims that live there, that practice there, that have businesses that operate there? Now, you would never, ever see that in another type of country.
Well, Israel, Arab Israelis are actually serving the Israeli army. I mean, what else we can say? They actually see themselves as part of the country
that
they need to defend, because by the end of the day, if you look around and you see what's happening in Syria, what a massacre we have there, and Yemen, and, you know, everywhere else, you know, you can tell that actually Arabs do suffer and nobody care, because it's a lot easier to just talk about a Palestinian problem. But is this the real thing? Is this the real thing? About a few months ago, I was in Israel, and I was there with my parents trying to get the treatment for my dad who went to the hospital. And I have to tell you, we'll have to stand there in the line as Israelis, because there were hundreds of refugees from Syria, children, babies, women, old people, anyone from Syria that our doctors were actually operating and helping. But do we see it in the media? Does New Zealand ever, ever bother to go there and show people that Israel do care about Arab children? That we do care for them just like we look after our own? We don't get a coverage.
So here's the challenge for you and I, and for all of those that are listening. So while people are listening here this morning, maybe this is the challenge that we need to have. So we can say our prayers and we can pray for Israel, we can pray for the Jewish community. But my grandmother also said their prayers need to have legs. They need to have hands. So the thing is that what are we going to do? What are we going to do to find a way to be able to better promote that? And so that's the challenge I think that we can put to you and I. And then maybe later on in the year, as we do different interviews, you can ask me the question. So what have you done, Alfred? And then, of course, I'll ask you the question, the same thing too.
Okay. I can tell you my ideas later on. I have a lot of ideas that I think we, a lot of things that we can actually do on that area. One of them can be documentaries. When you go and you interview people and you see the real thing, you can interview Israeli Arabs, you can get into hospital and see the whole truth. We can organize people to come over, the one who oppose Israel so much. We can just bring these people and show them the truth. Come on, have a look.
Absolutely. Look, and I've heard of people who have gone across from New Zealand. In fact, there was a refugee woman, young woman who became a dentist. I've forgotten her name, but then she's now going back to give back to her country, right, in dentistry. And everyone applauds and says it's a wonderful thing. Why aren't we getting, Israelis that are here, Jews that are here, to be able to come together and say, getting young people to then go back and to give back and use the, and I think what we want to send is a clear message of the humanitarian effort that Israel is exercising every day.
But you know, this is not a good cover story for the news. It's not good enough, because they keep feeding people with the same storyline of Israel is the occupier and the Palestinians are miserable. Now, I know it's not the truth, because I used to live in Israel and my friends are Arabs as well. And they know that's not the truth, but it's really difficult to get it to New Zealand media at the moment, and hopefully we are going to make a change.
Well, one thing I love about the fact of the nature and the character of what it means to be an Israeli is resilience. The fact is that you'll always say that no matter what happens, as they say, they try to kill us, we just keep coming back. We fight for the survival. We know what it means to be able to survive. and at the same time thrive. And I think that, you know, we're the further, New Zealand is the furthest part of the world. So it's a combination, I think, of two things where you've got Israeli resilience, and then in New Zealand, what we've often known, our character is innovation. Mind you, Israel is the innovators of the world in regards to ICT and other things, because it's born out of that. But I think that there are ways in which we can find new ideas where we can combine the two things together, the character of resilience, the character of innovation in a place where we don't have much, and see whether out of that we can be able to then get the stories out. And like I said, I think the best thing to do is that we need to have a new generation that actually understands, you know, from the inside out, actually what Israel is.
Exactly, and it's not just in the media, it's also across schools. You know, I believe the main work is on educating the new generation. I'll give an example. One of the high schools here, which I don't want to say the name, but part of social studies NCA exams is actually to write about the Palestinian, you know, problem, Israeli-Arab conflict, and one of the speakers was Rob Berg, who came over that particular day to school, and he gave a speech about the history of Israel and tried to explain for what he could about the conflict. And then after the whole thing, some teachers said, well, that's his opinion, that's his view, but we definitely think something else. Go on Google on YouTube and see what poverty there is within the Palestinian society, how Israel is occupying the whole Palestinian propaganda. I've been told that when you need to write an essay for the NCA, you actually need to follow the pro-Palestinian storyline, because if you're going to be a little bit of pro-Israeli, you're not going to get the mark.
Well, I'd be interested in, so here's where that I can be of some support there. If you can give me the evidence, the fact is that that's correct, then I will advocate to actually challenge that to the Ministry of Education. And this is where this is all about getting smarter in what we do. So when, and to any of our listeners that are out there, if you can provide evidence that shows that situations like that, that actually do, I mean, that is a soft form of anti-Semitism, right? Because it's not giving, allowing a student to have a balanced view. We teach our children to be critical thinkers, but in critiquing, you need to take in your research to have both sides, so you can actually then both critique in a balanced view and a perspective. If you, what you're saying is correct, then, you know, I make myself available to be able to receive any of that information, and to then to be able to advocate and strongly sort of challenge that in the educational system.
Okay, now, in what areas do you think that Israel can help New Zealand, or in what ways do you think we should cooperate with each other?
So one of the things I think is really important, so there are people like myself, in a sense, Pacifica people, who have probably got some Jewish ancestry, and they may not know, well, what do I do with that? I mean, I've, you know, in my wife's family, they've got the Rosenquist, because they were Jews that were in England, and there's a connection there through her family that's there. There are a number of Pacific people that I've heard of that have got, like, you know, the Māori family with the Nathans. There are other people that have got this. So I think that when you've got a connection that way, I wonder if we can find ways to proactively then help people to then understand, you know, well, because people want to know what their whakapapa is. They want to know what their genealogy is. We call it akapapa. And when you understand that, then you've got a greater sense of saying, wow, now that's who I am. So now I'm proud to say that I am Cook Island Kiwi, but I'm also Jewish. You know, can we? And when you start to do that, you give people greater confidence, then you've now just won another person over to become a champion. So one of the things that I think would be important is that, how do we find ways to help people to find out how they connect back? So I was talking to Dame Leslie Max, because when I talked about my my grandmother, she said to me, oh, here's the places that you can go to research that. So it was great. I had someone, but I had to ask. And I wonder if there are other ways that we can find to maybe run a campaign, or a way of being able to help people. I know that Simon Dallow, for instance, he's come out, and he was part of a thing called DNA Detectives. So they found out where they – did a match, and they found out, he found out, like, wow, I've got Jewish ancestry as well. And now you got one person in the media, you know, and he's a newsreader on TVNZ, but now you've got another person who's turned around and said, wow, that's part of who I am. So his journey will be to discover what that is. So I think one of the things that's an immediate connection is that how do we help people easily connect?
Well, using the whakapapa and knowing about your genealogy, you can make a connection. And that's interesting because I wrote about it. I actually been given the whakapapa from one of the Tohunga of the Maori people. And well, I was writing it. And this is a great way, actually, to connect, because I'll tell you something that's going to surprise you now. Maybe you heard about it or not. Do you know that 85% of Palestinians are actually have Jewish ancestors?
No, didn't know
okay.
That.
Well, that's what it is, because when we're talking about the lost tribes of Israel, okay, the elita was actually on exile, but a lot of Jews were remained around Israel. And they took some blood sample and they did some genetic checks, and they actually find out that a lot of Palestinians have Jewish ancestors. Sounds funny. But in Hebron, one of the holiest cities in Israel, you know, in one of the villages there, they actually found Arabs who hide their Jewish identity because they're afraid. And they're Palestinian. And they're absolutely Palestinian. Some of them are aware of it and they keep it quietly because they're really scared from the radical Muslims. Some of them are not aware of it and they don't know much about their connection. But it's interesting, isn't it? How using a whakapapa actually can connect people and promote peace.
That's right. I totally agree with that. And I think that there are so many that are out there in New Zealand. So one of your question was, how can we find a way to be able to help? I think that's one of the ways to be able to talk about that. The other one is that Israel, I think, now is being seen in so many different ways that it has so much to offer the rest of the world. When we think about ICT, information communication technology, Israel is one of the world leaders, if not the world leader. We've got now trade groups that are heading over to Israel. So there's a Trans-Tasman trade group where you've got businesses that are going across. I know that in June, July next year, they've got the World Agritech. Now, in regards to agriculture and the aquaculture and agriculture, Israel is leading.
Oh, yes, I know. You know what happened in our desert.
That's right.
You just have to go and see what Israel can make out of the desert.
With a glass of water.
Exactly.
In comparison. So all of that, I think, is wonderful. And, you know, my daughter's doing a master's in ethnography, and it's around innovation and ICT. The one place they talk about is not Silicon Valley. It's Israel. And so I think that actually Israel is understated in what it has to offer. And I think that, you know, let's take Dame Leslie Max. So with the HIPPI program, that came from Israel, a program in which it engages for all children around reading, helping parents to engage with their children. So their preschool program, which went then, and isn't it interesting, the organization is called Great Potentials, and are doing amazing things.
Yes.
A lot of people would not know that program came from Israel.
I didn't know either.
No, well, there you go. I've taught you something.
I learned something new today.
Yeah, so there are so many things that I think that Israel has to offer us. So there's opportunities for, there are now trade trips, there are tourist trips, there are biblical trips that people are doing. But one of the other things I think is important is that when it comes to those cultural, so it was great that you and I met at Hanukkah in the park. So how can we have, and I know that there's always the challenges around, you know, bringing the community together. But how do we get, for instance, when they have cultural festivals, how do we have a cultural festival that celebrates, you know, the Jewish community that other non-Jews can actually then take a part of? We have Pacifica Festival here. We have Polyfest. And Polyfest, for instance, is the largest Polynesian festival in the world. They've got over 100,000 people that come. They've now got a group called Others. So, you know, just think that there's so much that we could keep talking about. So,
oh, I'm sure we do. Well, good luck with your work. I think you're doing an amazing job, important job, connecting between people, between cultures. And we'll have to say goodbye, and hopefully we're going to come up next time when I'm going to interview you with more plans and programs about what we can do to achieve peace in the Middle East, peace within ourselves as well, how we can actually maximize the potential of people who think they're a problem, but they're actually not. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Sinead. Shalom.
Shalom. And thank you, Nature V, for sponsoring us.